Welcome back, everybody. This week on The Threshold, we are not sitting down with a guest to talk about what they believe, what shaped that belief, and why it matters, because we are between season one and season two right now. I am interviewing people for season two. I'm really excited about a lot of the conversations I'm getting to have and getting ready to share them with you. You're going to hear from some of those people later on this episode, along with some of our other friends. But until that point, we are just going to dive into some big questions about life, or just things we like to talk about during our Between Season Odd Noggins series. Here we go. Hey, come on in. I really feel like we've reached a place in our culture where religious conversations can seem tense or even taboo. So every week, I invite a different guest to sit down with me to talk about what they believe, what shaped that belief, and why it matters. My name's Tony Vicenda, and this is The Threshold.
Is there a way that I can, like, search my Google searches?
Here? Maybe. You can just look on your phone. Thanks for joining us, everybody. It is Holy Week, which, if you are not Catholic, it's like the playoffs of Catholicism. So if all the work that happens over the course of a given year comes to a head over the course of the 7 days between Palm Sunday and Easter Sunday, which we call Holy Week, and if you're not Christian, I don't know that any of that matters, but if you are, happy Holy Week, and the Lord is risen. You'll probably be hearing this Easter week, so the beginning of Easter. Father Parrish is just kind of taking it easy, sitting back, doing nothing this week, right?
Oh, man.
He just made a face, a quizzical face at me. I don't understand. Are you not just relaxing and taking it easy this week?
No.
So what are you up to this week? What does it look like for a freshman priest during Holy Week?
Oh, man, it's just like the angst of doing something for the first time. That's all.
The angst, which is like normal people means angst. Mm-hmm. What is contributing to this sense of existential dread that you have about Holy Week?
It's just the first time for doing stuff. That's all.
There's two of you at our parish. Mm-hmm. So how many homilies or talks, right, for people who aren't Catholic, do you have to give this week?
I have to do three major ones in a row.
Okay. And the other guy also has to do, Father Brad has to do them as well, too, right?
Yeah, he does two this year. So
he's taking it easy this week.
No, because he's actually celebrating most of the liturgy, the ritual, whereas I'm preaching. And so there's a division of labor. It's just, I would just be.
So you're both working hard.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm also thinking through my emotions right now. And I was just like,
tell us your primary emotion right now. What's bubbling to the surface?
I've just been having some good conversations around, what is friendship and relationship and things like that. So I've been kind of processing through like a lot of different great conversations lately, and I've been trying to put it all in my head and then also pay attention to what's about to happen tomorrow.
Yeah. So when you have questions about life and the universe and you don't have anyone to turn to that you know of, what do you do?
I usually go to something like, I don't know, MSN.com.
MSN.com. No. You get on Netscape.
Yeah, I get on Netscape with my Prodigy.
Dial up connection.
Yeah. No, I usually go to Google.
You go to Google?
That's not really true. I actually have people I can talk to, but anyway, let's just pretend.
Right. Let's pretend you didn't, because it's good for the bit. So when lots of people have questions, because lots of people have people they can't talk to, or, you know, maybe they've gotten off Facebook for some reason, and they're looking for somebody to talk to. Lots of people will Google things. And so this week we wanted to talk about, what is the weirdest thing you've ever Googled? I've actually got a friend, Jenna, who is the person who originally kind of brought my attention to how great this question is. She's working on a podcast that is going to focus on just that. Man, I don't know who did what, There's some sirens in the background. That's exciting. So
somebody just probably jaywalked. It's Shoreline Police.
Yeah, but it is one of my favorite questions to kind of dive into with people. I've got a kind of lame response that's a Google answer, because I feel like the weirdest thing I've probably ever Googled probably had to do with duct tape, garlic and butts. My kids had something that's known as pinworm back when we lived in Texas, which is kind of like lice of the anus. It's mm-hmm. a parasitic creature that lives in your intestinal tract. You get it in areas where the permafrost doesn't go that deep, so it doesn't kill them. So Texas or the South or anywhere it's warm, if you get dirt in your mouth, which if you're a kid and you're playing outside, it's really easy to get dirt in your mouth, you can contract pinworms. And the cool thing about them, the coolest thing about them, is the way you have to kill them, in addition to taking medicine, is that when they crawl out of your butt in the middle of the night, you have to crush them. And so for adults, they would typically wake up if they had that happen, because it's very uncomfortable and itchy. For kids, they wouldn't necessarily. So as a parent, you have to wake up, stay awake, and like crush them. And so I was not about that life. My mom was when I was a kid, but I was not about that life. So I'm pretty sure at one point I Googled like alternate ways to kill pinworms. And specifically, my thought was like, they don't like garlic. And if they can't get out of the butt, they can't lay their eggs on the edge of the butt, which is why they come out at night. So I think I put duct tape, a little bit of garlic on it, on one of my not to be disclosed children's butt cracks.
That's really disgusting.
Yeah. Recently, the most weirdest thing I've Googled is information about the sizes and difference between different rubber bands.
Yeah. And cool. Cool. I'm sure everybody else is cool right now too, man.
Yeah. What about you? What's the weirdest thing you have ever Googled?
Gosh, this is really going in a weird direction, because sadly, one of them is why are my butt cheeks chapped? Right. So,
all right.
So if you're like, let's say that you grew up in a moderate, you know, a temperate climate. Somewhere in the northern hemisphere or southern hemisphere for that matter, but there's not too many of those places.
Right.
You know, and then you end up traveling or spending a significant amount of time in another place that happens to have a lot of heat or humidity. You know, there are things that you, realities that you didn't really deal with as a kid when you were growing up.
Like, right? Pinworms.
Like pinworms or, you know, a heat rash.
Yeah.
And I think the first time that I discovered that was a thing, I was really concerned. I was like, dude, I don't know why, like, you know, these are just muscles. They're right. They're like next to each other. They're not organs. I don't know why this is happening. And so I was super confused.
Right. And so my, I have another one that's not Google specific, but would be my typical answer to this. And that is, at one point I was running a bunch of weekend retreats, for different churches all over the place. And so I was buying a lot of like ropes, some knot time books, some like outdoor books. I had to buy some knives, some PVC pipe, like just a very random conglomeration of things. And all of a sudden, Amazon's predictive algorithm started, suggesting a bunch of like S&M books also too, which was a really just weird thing to have Amazon predict that I was interested in, that I was in no way, shape, or form.
That's why you curious stop, about. You got to stop searching for your youth ministry stuff on 4chan.
You're saying 4chan is not the best place to get ideas for youth ministry.
It's like, have you seen Firefly?
I have.
All right. And
one of the greatest TV shows of all times. I have a theory about Firefly. You finish your statement, then I want to tell it to you.
And then the movie that came from it,
Serenity,
right? You know, like the Reaververse, mm-hmm. you know, like I think that 4chan is like the Reaver area of
the internet. That's interesting. I like that. I have a theory mm-hmm. that Joss Whedon may be meta enough, and a good enough storyteller. I watched a documentary on brown coats, which are people who love Firefly. I am somebody who loves Firefly, but I would not consider myself a brown coat, which is really an homage to like the battle that is lost in Serenity Valley, and the normal people who rose up against the overshadowing government in this sci-fi thing, right? So brown coats. Mm-hmm. And I was, as I was watching this, I realized that the experience of the people on the ship of Firefly and the fans after Firefly got canceled parallels almost perfectly the experience of the Browncoats and then Malcolm Reynolds and the crew of Firefly, like this desire to, for something greater and beautiful. And this large, overwhelming, vague agency with ridiculous powers that won't allow that beautiful thing, that grander vision to be realized, is exactly what happens in the show. But it's also what happens in the reality of Firefly trying to get made. Like the studio that was in charge of it rearranged episodes that didn't make any sense. They moved the time slot around. I mean, there were things that were completely out of control of the showrunners. But I also wonder if Joss Whedon pitched to the executives, like, it would be really cool to make a show like this and then have you guys completely screw it up so that people respond in the exact same way to the storytelling that the people in the story respond to the situations they're confronted with.
That's interesting. I don't know how that makes me feel. Makes me feel like conflicted.
I know. I think it's potentially genius, probably also not true.
There's probably a subreddit for that somewhere.
There's probably, if there wasn't, it probably popped into existence retroactively at this point.
Yeah.
Have you Googled anything else weird?
Yeah. So speaking of strange kind of universes or whatever, I know that I've Googled recently that it struck me as really odd because I found a corresponding page for it. Usually if I Google something like odd or weird, like it takes me a while to search for it. But this one struck me because it was like the first hit. I was like, oh my gosh, dude, somebody's thinking this. And it was, what is the hierarchy of being of Tolkien's universe?
Explain what you mean by that.
So So first off, listener, note that I just used abstract language. Also note that somebody made a page using exactly that language, right? That's weird. Anyway, so what it is basically in, you know, in kind of traditional philosophy, right? You have a division of being, right? So, or like a hierarchy of being, meaning there's levels, right, of descending order or ascending order, depending on how you're looking at it, right, of more or less complex beings.
Right, which we would still have even in science, right? Like single-celled organism to complex organism to like vertebrate, invertebrate, sentient. Like we might look at it in an evolutionary scale from a sheerly human perspective. I know it's not the exact same thing. But
from a materialist perspective, correct. Yes, we have that.
Yeah.
From a philosophical perspective, it's probably one of the most unpopular things to talk about.
Right.
Anyway, like in, you know, cause in, for example, in Marxist and feminist philosophical circles, this would be considered, particularly feminist circles, this would be considered essentialism,
okay.
So, which is like a dirty word.
Right.
So anyway, nonetheless, you know, traditional philosophy would say like, there's, you know, like what are the things that have souls that are animated, right? Mm-hmm. Literally the word animate comes from anima, which means soul. Anyway, those things that are animated are plants, right? Followed by animals, then followed by humans, which are like kind of a strange, interesting aspect of that. Mm-hmm. And then angelic beings, including the demons, and then finally God. All right.
Right.
So that being said, in Tolkien, in his universe, right, he has... in his mythology, he has like a kind of a hierarchy of being as well. And I was, as I was reading through some storylines of going deep into my nerd phase, as I do every night before I go to bed, when I read, like
when you crawl into your nerd cocoon.
Yeah. My nerd cocoon.
Nope. Keep on going.
All right. And I read Tolkien every night.
Yeah.
So far.
So,
and so they, you know, some of these myths, I wasn't able to understand, like, wait a minute, what is this being in relation to this other being? And so I Googled hierarchy of being, from my phone in bed. And there is a professor somewhere at LMU who has you know, HTML text, page dedicated to
the hierarchy of beings.
Yeah.
So it was always really interesting to me. My parish priest growing up, who ended up being my boss at one point for a little while.
Oh, also. I remember. Sorry. I remember the last one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, his name is Father Bradley, and he actually is pretty expert on Tolkien. Mm-hmm. And so he did a young adult Bible study on the Silmarillion.
Oh, wow.
Book study, not Bible study.
Yeah.
Where we just talked through it. And I remember, like, he was one of the first questions I ever asked him about scripture was, if we're made in the image and likeness of God and we ever encounter aliens and they look different from us, what does that signify theologically if we're embodied souls, right? Mm-hmm. And he was like, that's an excellent question for which I don't have an answer. And
That was
a really good, like, just yeah. honest of him. And that was really meaningful for him to be like, that's a good question. I don't know. But the other one was like, where do hobbits come from? Because like,
yeah, they're mysterious. Their origin story is not really.
Yeah. Cause you got like dwarves and elves and humans and other creatures that we know their origin of. You have different types of orcs also too. Natural and the Uruk-hai. You've got these angelic creatures who are like wizards, right? You've got all these
sorry.
Yeah. You've got all these different things. Yeah. So super nerdy. But it never explains hobbits. And I don't want to spoiler alert for anybody, but the end of the Silmarillion, is the last like two pages is the Lord of the Rings and Hobbit trilogy condensed into like a page and a half.
Yeah. Like the act Bella.
And then some hobbits appear. Like everybody else, you get their long history, you know who their gods are, you know how these and their things. And I said, so I just went to him and I was like, who are hobbits? Like where it's like they just appear mm-hmm. at the end of the book. And so who are they? Where do they come from? And his answer was, according to like extra text things, like they're just meant to be the most meek of humans. So it's basically like the least of these, like the concept of those who seek comfort and quietness the most are actually the source oftentimes of the greatest power. And it's really meant to symbolize not just humanity, but the fragility and the weakness of humanity distilled into its most compact form is what hobbits are supposed to be. So they are a race of man, even though they live longer than men is his theory. I don't know if there's Tolkien experts out there, hit us up, let us know.
That's super fascinating. I like that.
Yeah.
Wow, man. Yeah. Those kinds of questions are super fun, especially when you have this alternate universe, when you can ask like really odd, lovely questions.
Right. That's one of the things I love about science fiction and fantasy is the ability to propose a completely ridiculous question mm-hmm. and pursue a philosophical or inherent truth mm-hmm. That you can discern narratively. And good fiction does that well and doesn't violate the rules of its own universe to make a point. Mm-hmm. Which so I would even say, even though I may disagree with the ethics oftentimes or the philosophy of Frank Herbert's Dune universe, I think it's one of the most internally consistent stories out of all of them. I love the way it dives into and dissects religion. And so I think that is one of the reasons I love it so much, even if I disagree with the philosophy. Whereas like you look at like Heinlein's Stranger in a Strange Land, which does some very similar things, and I really jam on the book, but the unedited original is way weaker of a story because it violates its own internal consistency a couple of times. And so,
yeah.
All right, so after all that nerding out, we're going to hear from a couple of our friends and fans about what they have Googled recently that's been weird, the weirdest thing they have ever Googled. Also, when we come back, I want you to think about this while we're on that short break listening to them also, is what drains our soul and what recharges it. Here we go.
Hello, folks. This is Mark Guiney from Radio Heart Media. And when Tony asked me the question, what is the weirdest thing you've Googled? I honestly don't know, but it made me think, what is the weirdest thing I've Googled in the last 24 hours? Because that I can definitely check out. So I went and looked, and in the last 24 hours, the weirdest thing that I Googled is the definition of the term to get shanghaied. Because I'd heard that somewhere. And I thought, what does that mean, getting shanghaied? Well, getting shanghaied, according to the internet, according to Google, means to enroll or obtain a sailor for the crew of a ship by unscrupulous means, as by force or the use of liquor or drugs. Shanghaied. Interesting. The thing that probably drains my soul is apathy. Just not caring about things that should be important, both in other people and in myself. Probably more so in myself. And the thing that charges my soul when I get to those moments is seeing people who do have purpose and do live it out in their lives, which inspires me to do the same.
Destiny Herndon De La Rosa from New Wave Feminist, and the weirdest thing I've ever Googled is Destiny Herndon De La Rosa from New Wave Feminists. The thing that probably drains my soul the most is internet trolls. I kind of can't handle them, but after a long day of reading insane anti-science comments, the thing that refills my soul is stand-up comedy. I can't get enough of it. And then I talk like Eddie Murphy for like a solid week afterwards. It's really weird.
Have you ever Googled yourself?
Yeah, it's usually, though, just like most of the pictures are about this like doctor at Cornell University who's an ornithologist.
I don't know. You're one of the most handsome priests there is. So I'm pretty sure if I Google your name, yep, there's handsome pictures of you. Search number one, you in your high school years, you sitting on some stairs. This guy who really loves his dog, this other guy with a creepy mustache.
That's him.
That's him?
Yeah.
He loves his dog. Look at him. He loves him so much. There's a picture of me.
So
and there's a picture of the bishop. Look at that. So it's basically
half-half.
You, handsome priest, ornithologist who loves his dog, creeper with a mustache, me and the bishop are what comes up when you search your name. I'm the only Tony Vicinda that I am aware of existing because it's an Americanized name. There's only about 100 to 150 Vicindas in the U.S. at this point in time. And they don't exist anywhere else in the world unless they've traveled from here. And my kids always think it's really funny because they assume I'm really popular and really famous because there's a lot of stuff about me on the internet, even though I've put almost all that stuff on the internet.
Mm-hmm. So, what was your guys' original name, like Vicindanopolis?
It's Wasinka. So it's a W and a K instead of a V and a D, basically. And it's an E instead of an I. Yeah, it's just... it's all mixed around.
Okay.
So anyways, so Father Parrish, what drains your soul and what recharges it? I think this is a really good conversation for this week.
Probably doing new things drains my soul pretty fast.
What do you mean by that?
New things that I'm responsible for. So I don't like doing those things. So, which means like that, you know, if I didn't have kind of the background that I'm, you know, I probably just wouldn't move.
Right.
You know, it's easy for me to be kind of stunned into, into submission of, you know, towards like just procrastination because I'm afraid of doing something and doing it wrong.
But you like to try new things. Like
I like to try new things that I'm not responsible for.
Oh, so that's really interesting. So I always tell
basically
people,
I could stay like I could be like a man child my whole life,
right,
and not have any responsibility or commitment, or I could try to being an adult and being like growing up, and that one is like
I always say that there are certain people who are good at being in charge, mm-hmm. and there are people who are really good like number twos, and then mm-hmm. there are people who are really good like further down, they don't want any sort of leadership responsibility. I am firmly in that second camp. I really love when someone else is actually in charge, but I've been given some of the authority to go and act on things. But ultimately, I have somebody holding me accountable, and I also have people supporting me in the process, which does make me sound like a petulant man-child who just wants his own way. But that really is like where I am most successful. And that's one of the, like, at our think about like parish life, like what we do for a job, like that's a lot of what I get to do. I have a boss who holds me accountable, right? I have people and a team who I work with who support me. I support them. But at the end of the day, I'm not just thrust into this position of actual like ownership and leadership.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that doesn't sound like a petulant man child circumstance. It just sounds like that's not eschewing any kind of sense of responsibility. It's just, it's how you operate within a framework.
I guess I just really don't want to be in charge.
That's okay.
But I do want to tell the person in charge what they should be doing.
Oh man. That's awesome. That's like, that's like a millennial right there.
It's 100%, right? Like I am certainly an early cohort millennial.
Yeah.
So that's what drains your soul. Let me see what drains my soul. I would say the number one thing that drains my soul is, like distraction.
Oh, yeah.
Like being in a kind of a constant and consistent state of allowing myself to become distracted. Like I run a whole bunch of projects. I'll go through these periods of time where I download a bunch of like games on my cell phone and then I delete them all and I turn my phone to black and white instead of color so that I don't get like drawn in by the super vivid nature of it. And that lasts for about a week. And then I turn it back to color. And then about a month later, I'll download a game. Then I'll download some more games. And then 6 months later, I delete everything. And it's not just that. It's new projects. It's, you know, figuring out reasons to be doing things other than what I know is the thing that is most in front of me. And those distractions really are, at the end of the day, what drain me. And I crave them so badly. Like, I just crave that distraction, not in a healthy level. This is a disordered desire. This is a desire I should not have, but I find myself deeply hungry for.
What, in that circumstance, what gives you life again?
So I talked about like kind of deleting everything. One thing that I'm really bad at right now, and I'm really frustrated because for us as Catholics, it's the end of Lent. And last year was maybe my best Lent I've ever had, my best experience of Lent. This year is probably my worst, which I find is not an uncommon situation to have a high experience followed by one that is worse, partially because you know what you want at that point in time. And so therefore you can identify, hey, here's what sucks about this. But what really recharges me is like fasting. I was somebody who, I remember I was listening to a talk a while ago and the person was talking about like how we gain self-control. And specifically Thomas Aquinas's approach to that. And they mentioned the concept of continency, which like for most of us, we just think of incontinency, meaning crapping yourself, right? Like adults being incontinent. Incontinency, basically the ability to kind of hold stuff in. And that's a good analogy. Like that is an understanding of continency, but continency is self-control, right? The ability to actually control myself around things in general. And so I got in the habit about a year ago, and I've done this a couple of times, but I maintained it for almost a full year this time around, of fasting twice a week. And that was like 600 calories or less, sometimes no food, and I would eat it all at once. And I stopped, like, I didn't want sugar after a while. Like, I broke that. Like eating sugar, like refined sugars, made me feel horrible. Carbs are not attractive. Like, I wanted fresh fruits. I wanted vegetables. I wanted protein, and that was pretty much it. And spiritually, like that really taught me to say like, hey, I have control. Like I have control over these distractions and these other things, but it also created kind of this space. Like I am somebody who from a young age, vicendas didn't really eat because they were hungry. We ate because we were bored and there was food around the house. Like my siblings would tell you that. I would tell you that. My parents didn't necessarily support that, but I don't think they were aware of it, not because they were bad parents, just because I don't think we think about that. And so, as an adult, kind of coming to a real good relationship with just food and being able to understand that I can have self-control in that area, and that meant I could have self-control in all these other areas, like my prayer life, which I would say is a big part of why fasting resonates with me, is because it creates a space for prayer and a reminder, like if I'm hungry, right, I can go pray, right? Like if I'm hungry, it kind of returns my attention to like, well, you're not going to eat food right now because you're fasting and you should go and do something more beneficial instead of, whether that's work more, spend time with your kids, which probably should have been what I said first, or pray. That kind of returns your attention to that. So the practice of fasting, when I'm doing it, it actually recharges me a whole lot. Like it gives me a sense of vitality that I don't think I experience any other time. And I've been doing really, really horribly at it lately. Mm. How about you? What recharges you?
I would also say that distractions
recharge you.
What you have been saying resonates with me as far as draining and recharging. I'm going on a 7-day silent retreat after Easter, right? And I just really relish that because I really just, for me, it's like, I always think that distraction is like avoidance of the real, right? Like maybe I'm afraid of reality and so I want to avoid it. So I can do that by constantly distracting and giving myself a, you know, kind of dopamine boost of whatever.
Right.
You know, and so which is partly why I like kind of took Facebook off stuff and stopped using Instagram. Now, like, only Google News is my only like dopamine fix, which is not really that much of a thing. It's more like,
right,
it's
gotta get a hit of that Google News. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Cause like, then I get to scroll through and like, yeah, not interested. And then I'm just like, okay, I'm gonna go read something. But anyway, I think like this avoidance of the real, is like what drains me. And so I need something where I can kind of like get launched back into reality. And I think that there's just seasons. I mean, I used to kind of feel bad that like, shouldn't I just be doing the, having this all the time? But I just don't think that's a human's work, right? Like, we need time away, right? Time away, like time for rest, right? Where we can go back into reality more fully. And so, in the dailiness of life. That being said, though, what recharges me in general, though, is I think like, I would say, in relation to what I was talking about earlier about being new, I think that what recharges me is actually taking a risk. And like, so instead of me being afraid of, you know, like the new things that I have to do that I don't know how to do them, that I'm responsible for, instead, like actually taking a risk and then just doing it, and with combined with, this is essential, an awareness of what I'm A, afraid of, and B, what's one simple step, and then putting my whole heart on the line and doing it and seeing what happens. And that recharges me a lot.
So for you, there's this understanding of the need to risk an engagement with reality.
Yeah.
Right. Like, the reality is not coming from that comfortable nerd coon that you curl up in each night necessarily.
Yeah. And that's a little No. That's why I'm always a little bit suspicious of Lord of the Rings world, because it's a little too developed. Right. Yeah. it's like, it's an alternate reality.
Cool.
Anyway, sorry.
No, I think that's very, very a good stupid thing. But yeah, I think this idea of like kind of taking a risk, right? Like of knowing that kind of revitalizes you. Like, so many people I know, like when they come close to death is when they really kind of gain an appreciation of life. Like, when there's been this actual risk of like growth and loss, that's what really charges them. So I think it'd be really fun to hear from you guys kind of what you think about that. Hear what your thoughts on that. And I would also really encourage you guys, maybe like this week, as we, you know, like Easter just happened by the time you guys listen to this, though for us, we celebrate Easter as a season. But think about, what's a risk you could take in life? You know, what's a risk you could take that would maybe ground you in the reality of things around you? And what's a way that you could engage more deeply in that? So this is our second in our Odd Noggins series. I really should have already thought about what we're going to talk about next week. I think I made a list at some point in time, but I don't have it in front of me. So we'll drop those questions out on our Facebook page and in the show notes. We'd love to hear from you guys answers to what you think about this and other things in our Facebook discussion group. As always, please, we appreciate any feedback you have. If you're able to rate and review the podcast, we love 5-star reviews, but we're happy to get any sort of feedback that anyone has, no matter what type of review you give us. Also, we'd love to have you guys check out, we've got a live show coming up on April 17th. It's going to be in the Oak Cliff area of Dallas, Texas. It's going to be at the Texas Theater, which is the theater that Oswald hid in after he shot JFK. And then afterwards, we're going to have a little after party over at Small Brew Pub. That's with myself and Edmund Mitchell. It's going to be part The Threshold and part The Show with Edmund Mitchell. Think of it as a underground podcast experience / variety show /
Texas
improv thing. But yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited to do that. You can find out more information about that on our Facebook page. It's going to be a free event, but bring cash for drinks and other stuff also too. And we would love to have you guys come out if you're anywhere near there. We've got a couple more of these before we start into season two. I'm also going to start introducing you guys to some of our new co-hosts who are going to be stepping into the rotation. And we're looking forward to sharing some of those interviews with you. If you are a subscriber on our Patreon at the $5 or higher level, I'm going to tell you guys a fun story this week also. So I will drop that in later on this week, probably Thursday after this episode goes live, about what one of our guests shared with me about this that is not for everyone to hear. So until next time, I would encourage you guys to get out there to F in F-ability and to talk about what really matters.
Awesome.
Thank you.